From VOA, Press Conference USA, here is your host, Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Joining me on the program is VOA senior political analyst Brian Padden. Our topic on this edition of the program is the United States ready to hold the November 2020 general election amid the COVID-19 pandemic? Will more states permit early voting and what is called no-excuse absentee ballots? We shall find out on this special politics edition of Press Conference USA with a man who is no stranger to these VOA microphones. John Fortier is director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center. That's a prominent think tank here in Washington. He's also a regular panelist on my other news analysis program, Encounter, where he battles it out on all things political with his worthy opponent, Jim Kessler, senior vice president at Third Way. As a matter of fact, on recent editions of Encounter, we have broached the topic of voting in America and the controversy over voting by mail. On a couple of those programs, John Fortier gently reminded me that he is the author of a book on that very topic entitled Absentee and Early Voting: Trends, Promises, and Perils, published in 2006. If the topic was relevant then, imagine how much more relevant it is today, as U.S. citizens are still wary of going to the polls due to the coronavirus pandemic and unrest over police violence. Because of these two phenomena, it is likely that fewer polling places may be open in November. At least that was the case during primary elections over the past several months, particularly in the crucial state of Wisconsin. According to the Pew Research Center, two-thirds of Americans expect the presidential election will be disrupted by COVID-19, and a sizable majority favors the option of voting by mail. However, that majority breaks down along party lines. Again, according to the Pew Research Center, nearly 9 in 10 Democrats favor allowing any voter to vote by mail if they want, while Republicans are split. 49% support allowing universal voting by mail, and 50% oppose this. According to the Ballotpedia website, quote, as of April 2020, 39 states and the District of Columbia, that's Washington, D.C., permitted what is called no excuse early voting. 5 states, Colorado, Hawaii, Oregon, Utah, and Washington, conduct what are commonly referred to as all-mail elections. In these states, voting is conducted primarily, although not necessarily exclusively, by mail, unquote. Well, we shall talk more about the pros and cons, and of course, the politics of voting by mail and other options to the traditional in-person voting with none other than John Fortier. And John joins us via Microsoft Teams, as we are still unable to get to our VOA studios during the pandemic. John, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Carol.
And as always, I'm delighted to welcome my colleague, Brian Padden, our in-house political guru.
Hi, good to be here.
So, John, congratulations belatedly on your book, published back in, 2006. Is as relevant today as it was then, if not more?
Only 14 years for those. Congratulations. Thank you, Carol.
Well, thanks for reminding us about the book. And you said that voting by mail and early voting have been on the rise over the past decade. What are the various options a U.S. citizen has besides going to the poll in person?
Well, maybe a quick history is worthwhile here. I won't go all the way back to the Civil War, which was the first time we voted a lot by absentee, but really starting in the 20th century and building, there were more options for people who were away from their polling site to vote by mail, by absentee, we used to call it. But that number stabilized to be kind of a small number, about 5% of people who were maybe business people away for the day or for the week, and some people who were too ill to make it to the polls. You had to request your ballot in advance. You needed a reason often that you couldn't just do it for any reason. And then you also had some privacy protections, which were common. You might have needed to go to a notary public or have some witnesses sign. That was meant to protect the secrecy of the ballot, the privacy of the ballot. Starting in the late 70s in California and continuing for the next couple of decades, especially out west, a number of states tried to experiment with allowing more options for voting, more convenience options. And the first one was to really expand the voting by mail, to take away those reasons, to get rid of the witness requirements, and to promote it as a convenience mode of voting. A little bit later, 10 years or so later, some states started exploring What about opening polling places before Election Day, early voting, as we might call it, in states like Tennessee and Texas in the late 80s were sort of beginning to do that process. The big story is both of those methods have really expanded over time. I certainly saw that when I wrote my book 14 years ago, but those trends have continued. And so in the 2016 election, we saw the number of people voting by mail was close to 25%. The number of people voting early was just under 20% or so. And both of those numbers climbing each election by 2-3 percentage points. So over 40% of people voting one way or another before Election Day in the traditional polling place. We expected those trends to continue even before we had COVID-19. So we were going to see a rise, but I think we're obviously going to see more of a rise, both because states and administrators might want to do it, but also because many people, not all, but many people are asking for those possibilities, especially the possibility of voting by mail.
John, talk about the quirky nature of voting here in America. The states control voting, right? Each state. And what is the role of the states versus the federal government in our voting system?
Yes, we have one of the most decentralized voting systems in the world. There's no single body, electoral commission or administration in Washington for the elections. It's really 51 different elections, the 50 states and the District of Columbia, and they all have different rules. Yes, there are some standard rules about voting rights and some other things at the federal level, but the real key laws and rules are at the state level, and the key running of elections is done at the county or even town level, and so it's very decentralized. What that means is a state like Oregon, which you mentioned, and Oregon was the first state to, over time, it evolved to going to be 100% voting by mail. Obviously, they vote that way, but many states in the East and South look still pretty traditional. They have some absentee voting. They might have a little bit of early voting, but they're still doing most of their voting, the vast majority, on Election Day at polling places. So I think that is one of the challenges we are going to face. There are states that may want to do more voting by mail, and I think they're going to be able to do some more, but it depends on where they are on the spectrum. If they're a state that does a lot of it already, boosting it up some more, it might be easy. If they're a state that doesn't do too much, they might be able to move somewhat up that curve, but there are always problems of trying to put something new in for an election. There are a lot of systems that need to be put in place, and voters themselves may not be as enthusiastic in some of those states. So it will be a bit of a hodgepodge from state to state as to what we do normally, but also what we do in response to the COVID-19.
But basically, the states have the prerogative. The federal government can't say you can't do more early voting to allow mothers and people who can't get to the polls on Election Day, which is what, the first Tuesday of the month of November? Or is that
first
correct?
Tuesday after the first Monday, yes.
Right, the first Tuesday after the first Monday. So it's really the states, but they also need the resources. And sometimes that has to come from the federal government.
Well, you know, we have a complicated system of federalism with respect to elections. The federal government can override the states and step in and pass laws that are national. And it has in certain cases related to voter registration and voting rights and other matters. You see, certainly Democrats have had bills in the current Congress which seek to send some money to the states, but also to require certain types of voting by mail. Will we have a big federal mandate for this election? I guess I'm not sure. We still have some political battles to go in the appropriations process in Congress, but it is possible the federal government could step in with some standards or some requirements. On the question of money, it's an interesting one. Traditionally, the federal government has provided no money for elections, even though the states are running their own state elections, but they're also running the presidential and the House and Senate races at the federal level. Really, the first time we ever gave money to the states to do anything was after the 2000 election problems we had. We passed a law called the Help America Vote Act. We sent out one big pool of money, which was used by states to upgrade their equipment. That hadn't gone on for a while, but in recent times, in the last year or so, with the various issues we've had both the questions of potential foreign interference and now questions of running an election under an emergency circumstance, we've seen a couple of pots of money, smaller than the big one in the past, go to the states, and there is talk of more. Does there need to be more? Congress is still battling that out. So I think there are going to be more resources needed at the state level to do whatever they need to do, whether they provide them themselves or locals provide them or that's federal. And whether there are any strings attached at the federal level to that money, question still to be resolved.
I'd like to turn to my colleague, Brian Padden, for a question, particularly with respect to some politics. We're seeing President Donald J. Trump railing against voting by mail, saying that it is subject to fraud, although there's not much evidence to support that. At any rate, let me turn now to Brian for a question.
Hi, John. Let me follow up on what Carol just said. is this debate over expanded voting, it has been cast as a political divide between Republicans who oppose it and Democrats who favor it. Is it that clear cut? Is it a purely political argument for whichever side wins that argument gains some sort of advantage?
Well, I do think there are some political differences and attitudes about voting by mail, voting early, or even more broadly about whether you're looking to put reforms in that are about convenience or whether you're really trying to boost the integrity of elections to prevent problems from happening, prevent fraud or other attacks on our election system. Broadly, Democrats are more in favor of the convenience voting and Republicans emphasize some of the integrity issues more. Now, it's true that we have, you know, number of states that do voting by mail or early voting or have some reforms that are in the Republican camp that are more voter friendly, more convenience friendly. But I think we do see some differences. I don't think we're likely to see an expansion of voting by mail have an effect to help one party or the other. The evidence really is not that it helps either party. Expanded voting, Republicans sometimes take advantage of it. Democrats sometimes take advantage of it. And the other thing I will mention, just because it is often said, is there hasn't been a lot of strong evidence that these convenience methods of particularly voting by mail and early voting are actually helpful for increasing voter turnout. It may seem like it should. It may seem like you remove those obstacles. People will start streaming to the polls, but often it's people coming from other modes of voting. They were going to vote in person. Now they're going to vote by mail. There's a little bit of controversy about the research on that in recent years, maybe showing a small effect, but certainly broadly speaking, there is not a large effect opening up to more voting by mail or voting in person in terms of general voter turnout.
How valid is some of the criticism that voting by mail could open up to more opportunity for voter fraud?
Well, I mean, this is a very contentious subject, and I don't think that we have a large voter fraud problem in our country. That being said, I do think that there are some significant integrity issues related to all forms of voting, but certainly related to voting by mail. And some of those, I think, in the history of absentee voting, I brought up in my book a number of years ago. One of them, of course, is that a ballot by mail is not completely private. You don't have the privacy of the voting booth when you go into the polls and you can pull the curtain behind you. You can vote how you want, no matter what anybody said to you or pressured you to do. There's certainly some questions about the transmission of ballots as well. Again, in a polling place, we're not worried that someone else is going to handle your ballot. That ballot might not get there. You'll get the ballot directly from the poll workers. You'll submit it into the machine, often yourself. And so there are some questions, and those have come up under the form of a term sometimes people use, ballot harvesting. Do you want to allow private individuals, outside groups, to go collect ballots from people, return them to the polling place? If you do want to do that, do you want to regulate it in some way? Do you want to say maybe only you can bring 10 ballots back? One side, Democrats broadly think that allowing those sorts of practices might be helpful, help people get their ballots in. Republicans often point to the point that maybe those groups won't return the ballots. Maybe they'll be selective about it. Maybe some things will get lost in the way. And so, you know, I think there are some legitimate questions about voting by mail, some of which states that do a lot of it try to mitigate by some practices, and other things that are a little harder to change.
And as you said, Democrats seem to be more on the side currently of expanding voting, making it more convenient to vote, with the expectation, I guess, that they can get more of their supporters energized and out to the polls. What measures can they do to ensure that their voters can have access either to expanded voting or to some polling places where there's been complaints that there have been limits and time and locations that purposely try to exclude some Democratic base voters?
Well, I think there are two questions. One is really for the administrators, people running elections, what kind of changes they would make. And then secondly, the parties themselves, how they could interact with voters. One caution is that the presidential election has the highest turnout of any election by far. And most of the time, we do not encourage changes in the way you run elections for that election. Usually you want to roll it out in a much lower turnout election. Try it out in the midterms, try it out in the primaries or local elections. A state like Oregon, it went to voting by mail over a number of years, sort of slowly built up to going to 100%. Now, that's not absolutely possible given our crisis today, but change can be disruptive and change can be hard on the administrators, things that they do, but also on the voters who, you know, might not want to vote by mail, might not be used to voting by mail, might not know how to do it well, might make more mistakes. And so I do think that's a kind of caution. I do think broadly we're going to see more voting by mail because voters will demand it and administrators want to do it. But I think it will look very different in different states. And I don't think we should think that we're going to move dramatically to 100% or near 100% voting in many, many states that way. And that also means that people really have to think about how they're going to run the other parts of the election, how they're going to run election day at polling places and how they might have early voting sites. And those two are going to be dramatically affected by our COVID crisis. We've seen already in some of the primary elections, the problem of getting poll workers, always a problem. But, you know, with poll workers generally being older, maybe not wanting to come out for the election like they used to, not having those people in place is very difficult. The problem of the sites that you have voting at. Schools are very common. Other public facilities, some of them are not going to be available in the same way that they were. And so you see some places where there have been lines, partly because the facilities are fewer. Maybe the facilities aren't as good. You need more space for voting with social distancing. You don't have the poll workers. And then there are the changes that you might be instituting to process some of these ballots. So I do think those are significant issues. The one other thing I'm going to add that I do worry about, and I worry about this in a normal times, but I'm especially worried this time, is in many states, especially those who use vote by mail, we've seen a longer and longer time to count the election results. It's in part because many of the ballots come in late, and some states allow ballots to come in with a postmark, but after election day, and others don't. But the longer it takes to count, people worry about those election results. Lawyers get involved and often can string the process out a longer time. I don't think there's anything nefarious about that. I think states do what they're meaning to do with their processes, but I do think it's not the best thing for us to take a very long time to resolve elections. Add to that new states trying new things, adding much more voting by mail than they were used to, voters not being as familiar with the process. If the election is close and we come down to a few states, I think it could get quite messy having longer delayed election results in a number of states. So to the extent that the states can mitigate that, I think that's a good thing.
I think those are excellent points, John Fortier. And it seems to me that we're going to have to educate the public about potential delays. We're not going to have next day results that we're used to after the vote in November. So it will be incumbent upon all of us to educate the public. We're in sui generis times with the COVID-19 pandemic. We'll take a short break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our guest is John Fortier, director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center and author of Absentee and Early Voting, Trends, Promises, and Perils. I'm Carol Castiel, along with VOA senior political analyst Brian Padden. And this is a reminder that our PCUSA podcast is available on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. You may also follow us on Twitter or connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel VOA. Here's a shout out to a loyal Facebook fan from another great democracy, Ankit Kumar Barwal from New Delhi, India. If you want to hear your name and home country on the air, please send an email to PCUSA@voanews.com, or better yet, like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. So back to our special guest, John Fortier. John, earlier you talked about convenience versus integrity with respect to voting by mail, early voting, but those two shouldn't be mutually exclusive. Do you agree that we should have convenience and integrity, that there is a way to fuse the two, expand voting, and still have integrity and permit convenience? Because I think we're going to have to, particularly given the COVID-19 pandemic, whether there's a resurgence in November or that it still continues. As we were saying earlier, older poll workers will not feel comfortable going to the polls. Many polls may be closed. People will be forced to either vote early or vote by mail.
I absolutely do think there are ways of combining convenience and integrity. And, you know, it's an easier way of either party to think about just convenience or just integrity. But there are definitely some practical ways of thinking about that in the polling place. It's going to be exacerbated by this crisis. And so I agree with you that we're going to see many more people demanding different solutions. Plus, we're basically going to be cutting our resources in all sorts of ways. We're going to have a harder time processing absentee ballots. We're going to have a harder time finding polling sites, finding poll workers. So we do need more resources, especially for this election. And we also need some greater sense of being able to increase some convenience, increase some options, but to consider also some of the integrity measures that go along with those.
And John, speaking of resources, there's something called the Ballot Act of 2020. It's a bill that would allow every eligible voter the opportunity to vote by mail, regardless of state laws governing mail-in ballots. It was sponsored by Democratic Senator Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota and Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon. Actually, the full title is the National Disaster and Emergency Ballot Act of 2020. I suspect there's some GOPIE Republican opposition to that. Again, this is where the politics gets involved, where Republicans are skittish about mail-in voting, presumably because it could open itself up to fraud, even though, again, there's not much evidence of that. What's your view of this type of a bill?
Well, you brought up the issue before of whether the federal government is going to set some broad standards across the country or whether it would leave it to the states. This, of course, would. This would require states to change their processes to allow something that some of them don't. We've had a few of these earlier battles on funding, and generally they've ended up with money being provided and some guidelines for states provided, but not being too strict. And I guess I would worry that different states are going to have different ways of responding to this. And so some states might not very easily be able to go to offering a ballot to everyone they want without a reason, both from history, for the processes that they have. Maybe their voters don't want that. Yet they still might, with money and pointed in a direction, find ways to expand some opportunities to make it easier, to have more early polling sites. So, you know, I think broadly we're going to need more resources. We're going to need more resources in a number of areas, and we're going to do more voting by mail. But I do think that there needs to be flexibility from the states who, again, are going to be coming at this from very different positions. And being too strict on a mandate from the federal government saying you must all do this, I think is a recipe for the election not working that well in some states, which really aren't going to be able to comply in that way.
And John, of course, voting by mail wouldn't work well if we don't have a U.S. Postal Service that's working properly. And we are hearing by President Trump that he's not in favor of the Postal Service, or rather he would like to weaken it and maybe even eliminate it for other reasons. But many Democrats are very concerned about this. The chairman of the Democratic National Committee, Tom Perez, said that Republicans are trying to, quote, dismantle the Postal Service, and with it, jobs of hundreds of thousands of postal employees. And of course, connections to the rural and the poor and even tribal areas of the economy who depend on that. And former Vice President Joe Biden, the Democratic nominee, thinks that Mr. Trump may even be trying to bankrupt the Postal Service as a way to prevent vote by mail programs and maybe even sabotage November's election. So this is very much of a political issue. What's your take on the role of the Postal Service and the fact that so many Republicans, particularly President Trump, are trying to weaken it and therefore weaken voting by mail?
Well, I obviously do think the Postal Service has an important role to play in elections, especially as we do more voting by mail. I do think that the larger debate about the funding of the post office and the multi-billions of dollars difference of how the Postal Service should operate between the parties is much bigger and much different than can the post office help conduct voting by mail elections. I guess what I'm saying is that, yes, of course, the post office needs to keep doing as it's been doing, focusing on delivering ballots. There are certain programs within the post office that have really improved and are helpful. It would be good for them to continue and to step up those sorts of programs. But that's not where the money is that we're talking about, the big differences between having a deficit, not having a deficit, larger postal reform. So staying out of that bigger postal reform debate, I do think the post office is going to be important in this election. It will be important that it keep processes to make sure ballots are delivered as quickly as possible. We've been seeing somewhat slower delivery rates even before this, and voters need to be aware of those sort of things. But I don't think we shouldn't marry the bigger question of postal reform to this voting question too closely, because I think they're very different in terms of cost and scope.
Very good point. And John, I just want to say to our audience and to you as well that I actually voted for the first time with an absentee ballot. I voted by mail in our local election here in Washington, D.C. It was exciting. And I want to make a point because I think people conflate two concepts. When we talk about voting by mail, we're not talking about sending absentee ballots to everyone. We're talking about sending the applications, and some people conflate the two. So I asked for an application and then I got my ballot. But I think what many Democrats and others who want to see more people able to vote, especially during this crisis, they're saying we need to send more applications, or people need to request an application. Isn't that correct?
Well, I mean, there are a variety of states. So we certainly do have some states, we mentioned some of them earlier, who do mail ballots to all voters. And that's their primary mode. And some of them have almost no voting in person. Those are like Washington and Oregon, Colorado for the most part, Utah, Hawaii. There are some states that are very high up the chain also that vote a lot by mail. And they even have things like you can sign up to be a permanent absentee voter. So maybe not everybody, but many, many people just get the ballots automatically. They don't have to request them. But yes, in some other states, what some are calling for is that applications be sent to everyone. And some states have already done this. Some states have been doing that. I think that's going to be more widespread. The question of whether to do it or not is not so simple, depending on which state it is. It's not as if there aren't some logistical challenges to sending absentee ballot applications to everyone. There have to be, you know, a lot of thought to how one processes them, but also what one does with people who get a ballot and don't return it or want to vote in person that they've got a ballot at home. And those are things that states that do a lot of voting by mail have wrestled with. And for new states trying to do more, not only are there some logistical problems to doing it, but there are some potential problems and confusion that you have later that at least you have to think seriously about and not just think that the answer is to send applications out to everybody. So it certainly could be the right answer for some states, but it might not be perfect for all.
Brian Patton, do you want to jump in with any more questions?
Yes. Let me ask you, in addition to the stress you talked about the pandemic is putting on the election process, both in limiting number of workers and making it more difficult for people to get to the polls and making it actual a public health threat to be in these polling sites. There are also, in recent years, concerns over possible electronic hacking of voting sites. Do these developments indicate to you that the United States needs to change its system? It needs to move away from this 50-state, multiple counties, different ways of implementing the election process and develop one national standard?
Well, as I mentioned before, we're very different than much of the world. Much of the world has much more standard election systems across their whole country. But I do think it's very deeply baked in our DNA. It goes back to our early days and our electoral colleges by state as well. And so I do think it's more difficult to change. We certainly have seen at various times reforms that come up that we want to take on at the national level in certain areas. And I think that may be something that we do want to think about in certain areas. You mentioned the potential hacking of systems. You know, before the pandemic, that's where we were spending a lot of our time and attention and money, new federal money being spent to help states respond to that. It's not perfect to respond in a way in a very decentralized system, but we've done it. I think we've made a lot of progress since the 2016 election. But we also have a very strong partnership between the federal Department of Homeland Security and states and localities sharing information, helping with computer threats and other things that states and localities might benefit from having federal help on. So I do think we've done a good job. And I would remind people, we didn't have any votes changed. No hacker got into a voting machine. We've also made some big changes in the types of voting machines we've had. It's been over many years, but it's accelerated, especially moving to systems that have a paper part of the ballot. Filling out a paper ballot, maybe they get scanned or read, rather than just having an electronic machine that does not have a paper record to it. Most places have moved in that direction, and that's something that security people have been calling for, and we've moved in that direction.
And John Forty, as we close, given the likelihood that we will see more early voting and voting by mail, are you concerned about the upcoming election and the ability to conduct it with credibility and the potential for any kind of questioning? Because if we do have more voting by mail, as you indicated earlier, there will be several more days before we get the actual final results. The counting will not be automatic by the following day, which we're normally used to.
I think there are a lot of things to be concerned about. Now, we do have time. There's more money, more resources being put to this. And I think the administrators in America do an incredible job and will work to make it work. But having big change, especially big change for a presidential election when you have the most votes, is always difficult. So I think we're going to have some issues leading up to the polls. And I am especially worried about the late counting of ballots. And we'll have to be a little more patient. And we'll also have to be careful not to make mistakes in that way. And also more possibility for lawsuits. Anytime you delay the counting and delay the votes that are open on election day, you invite the possibility of lawyers coming in and essentially suing over every ballot that's not opened. And if we have a delayed election result and the election is close, I think it's going to be a very tense situation, even though we've done a lot to try to mitigate that.
The book is Absentee and Early Voting: Trends, Promises, and Perils. The author, John Fortier, director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center and regular panelist on the Politics edition of Encounter. John, thanks as always for your wisdom, which we will continue to seek in the run-up to the November election. Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Rick Pantaleo. Joining me on the program was VOA senior political analyst Brian Patton. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Press Conference USA. on The Voice of America.